Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
I'm going to pick the Patriots, who are now 8-2. Last year at this time, they were 3-7. Okay? The Patriots have now won their two toughest games to this point at Buffalo and at Tampa. They won a close game in Tampa against a team that always wins those kinds of close games, right? They are going to win the AFC East. They're actually going to win that. And in the last 2 years, They've won only 8 games in both years combined, 8-26. This is two people. This is Mike Vrabel and Drake May. And I can't even imagine that Mike Vrabel is not going to be coach of the year.
This is the Christian Arcan Show on WEEI.
Hour number two here, Christian Arcan Show, WEEI, live in our Brighton studios, powered by Verizon. It's nice to have you with us here tonight. Again, a happy Veterans Day to all the veterans out there listening. I want to remind everybody that along with being Boston Sports Original, we're broadcasting live all over New England, including Portland and Saco, Upper Valley, Keene, Brattleboro, Springfield, Worcester, Providence, Cape Cod, and the Islands. And if you're not in any of those places, don't forget you can stream WEEI anytime on the Odyssey app as well as the iHeartRadio and TuneIn apps. 7:30, we'll be joined by Doug Kye to the Boston Herald. Looking forward to his take on this team and this win streak, the hesitancy still on the frozen market there in Vegas, and the schedule looking ahead here. Short week against the Jets, couple of other games that should be wins before it gets a little tougher again with Buffalo and the Ravens. We'll have all of that for you at 7:30 when Doug joins the show. Looking forward to hearing from him and what he thinks about this team, this quarterback, this head coach, and everything else. But on the subject of the head coach, Mike Vrabel has been getting tons of praise. As I said last night, I'm of the belief that CBS had Mike Vrabel coach of the year penciled in, whether production meetings, whatever it was, as a storyline that they were going to pursue, a storyline that they were going to try and highlight. I think Vrabel probably was aware of some of that to an extent. You could tell the cameras were on him in a lot of situations, injured players, guys on the sidelines, pep talks, etc. That's the kind of thing that you do. They wanted B-roll. They wanted B-roll of Mike Vrabel interacting with his players, getting the most out of certain guys, motivating his team, all of that. And they got it. Oh, did they get it. From the kneeling on the ground with Barmore there, motivational speeches on the sideline. It's been going on all year, him running down the field with Antonio Gibson. Like, there's been all sorts of moments like that with Vrabel this year. And the team is completely bought in. There's no question about it. But when I was thinking on my way into to the show today about what's Mike Vrabel's system, really? We haven't heard too much about the system. Like, we know that there's a scheme and that there's certain players that didn't fit the scheme, but in terms of the system, I feel like when Belichick was here, the system was everything. The system, you fit in the system, and if you didn't, you were out on your ass. And even if you did and you didn't have the right personality, or just so you did something that Bill didn't like, he'd replace you with someone and plug that player into the system, and they'd be a cog in the system, and the system would keep on trucking along. And that was how they won, and that was why they won, and that was a big, big part of their success. And it was great. I mean, listen, it was a good system. It worked very, very well. They dominated the league for 20 years. It was quite a fine system. I'm not saying that that was a bad thing or that it was, you know, some sort of fraudulent thing. That's not my point here. My point is that Vrabel, his system is about the players. It's not about the system. It doesn't appear that way anyway. Belichick didn't highlight his players the same way that, Vrabel does. He didn't empower his players the same way that Vrabel did. Belichick's players walked around scared of him all the time. They were scared of him. I don't believe that there were a lot of instances. One of the few times I remember Belichick and the player really, really connecting on like more than just the, oh, that was a nice play yesterday or whatever, was when Randy Moss went into Belichick's office and invited him to that Halloween party. You remember that? Remember that clip? And he's like, Halloween, Bill. And Bill's like, Halloween. Huh? Yeah, yeah. You like the Halloween? You like the Hershey's chocolate milk? Whatever he said. You know, I forget what it even was. But that was one of the few times that you really got that. That you really got a sense of that. And I'm not just saying, you know, I know we all watched that hit piece on him from the Crafts there in the Dynasty. And he didn't see a lot of it there. But even in the football life and these other things, like you didn't see that much of it. You know, you'd see Rodney Harrison hugging him after they won the Super Bowl and things like that. But this is a team that's 10 games in. And I feel like Mike Vrabel has connected with his players on a more personal and, you know, listen to this. This is for Bill with Randy Moss. This is one of the few times I remember him and a player ever really, really connecting on like a personal level.
Not interested in that, are you?
In what?
Halloween party. Well, this is what it is.
We're dressed as the devil.
No, that's what we're doing. Well, hey, you might win the damn prize. Trying to, you know, get us a little DJ, get us a roll of rink, have us a good night. But like I said, you're more than welcome or whatnot.
I'm sure.
It's like, for instance, Halloween. I mean, we don't go out no more.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But we still have that.
It's a great holiday.
Yeah, it's a great holiday. So we're
candy and costume.
Yeah.
How can you beat that?
Right.
Right? Like, that was a nice moment. That was a nice human moment from Bill Belichick. You didn't get a lot of those. You really didn't. You didn't get a lot of human moments from him. It was the system. Like, you're not talking to me. You're talking to the guy who's in charge of the system. That's what I do. You know, I'm the great and powerful Oz, but the system is really what it's all about here. You know? And that was one of those rare moments. I feel like with Mike Vrabel, that sort of thing happens all the time. You know, you're seeing that sort of thing in practice. You're hearing about it in practice. You're hearing about it everywhere. And in turn, you're hearing players that are empowered in a way that Belichick's players never were. And again, I don't mean to point this out to say that Bill's way was wrong. Bill's way was great. Bill's way was as successful as it could possibly be. But Mike Vrabel has taken a team that was a bad team, a 4-win team, for 2 years, 8-win team over the last 2 years, and has now tied that number in one season. And he's done it with full buy-in. That's different, you know? That's not, you got to come here and you got to be part of the system. If you're not part of the system, you're out of here. You're out on your ass. That's not how Vrabel's doing it. Vrabel's doing it by putting his guys on a pedestal almost.
Yeah, this isn't, we're not trying to win one for the Gipper.
You know, like, he's not, it's not about you have to come here and do things my way all the time and you can't say anything and you can't do it. And if somebody asks you a question, you give them a vague answer. He's letting guys be themselves. He's letting guys talk after the game. You know, guys are up there, they're loose, they're smiling. Like, it's just, it's a totally different culture. It's a totally different way of doing things. And you remember even, like, at the end with Bill, like, when Gronkowski was there. And he was such a goofball and everyone's like, oh, I don't know about this. Oh, Bill's not going to like this. And Bill didn't like that. Bill hated that. Bill hated with Gronkowski's goofiness and how he'd go out and, you know, say all those weird things. You know? Like, you could tell that rubbed him the wrong way. And Gronkowski's one of the greatest tight ends who ever lived. But Bill didn't like it because it went against the system. It went against his way of doing things. And Vrabel is much more into guys being themselves and empowering them to do that. And I just think that's interesting. It's an interesting difference between the way things are and the way things were. And I'm still waiting to see exactly what the Vrabel system is, or if there even is one. You know, maybe there isn't one. A lot of it seems to just be based off of feel and, you know, vibes and stuff like that. You know, it's fourth down. Let's go for it. Yeah, we got a couple of seconds here. Let's burn it down on the 1 yard line. Let's do it. Let's just do it. Run the clock down. We don't want to give Baker the ball back. We're going to score. No problem. It's sort of this bravado mixed in with some calculated risks that he takes. And so far, he's batting almost 1,000 when it comes to that stuff. His challenges are good. His strategy is sound. I mean, it's just, there's nothing really to critique. No, I wasn't expecting that. I really wasn't. Especially considering the way things ended in Tennessee and then the year off that he had. It's not like he got snatched back up right away after he got fired in Tennessee. He sat for a year. Went to Cleveland and had some no-show job. You know, like that, it seemed like with Vrabel, like, maybe this whole thing, maybe that was just kind of a flash in the pan. Turns out it's not. And his second act here in New England has been spectacular so far. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Ron is in Medford. Hello, Ron.
How you doing, Christian?
What's up,
Ron? Based on the schedule, I mean, 11-2 is on the table.
Sure.
With the schedule, what they got. And you got four games left. I mean, they're literally going to be probably, I mean, in contention for that first wild card. And as far as Kansas City goes, I mean, the game against Buffalo, I heard a statistic that Mahomes was 3-for-16 when under duress. So maybe bringing a little bit of pressure, you know, maybe that's a little chink in the armor. But, you know, who knows? Maybe this is going to be one of these years like when Brady was here, when everything seemed to fall into place. Like, you know, like when the Chargers or the Colts lost at home, when they had home field through the playoffs, and we ended up with the AFC title game here. I mean, who knows? It just might be destiny, but it's unlike anything I've ever seen in a year. And Vrabel's been great. And I love the fact that, you know, when Drake May is asked about his offensive prowess and how well he's done, every time he speaks, the person he talks about is Josh McDaniels. And I'm glad McDaniels is getting some credit, because a lot of people seem to feel like he's not so great. But I think he's awesome.
Yeah.
He's done a great job.
Yeah, Ron, he's getting all the credit in the world on this show, especially for me, because I was not really all that hyped up on his hire either. I thought that was maybe, you know, just a little bit too parochial for me. Same with Vrabel. That was part of the reason why I didn't like it. I didn't like that they were going by the same kind of standards that they had for bringing in Gerard Mayo. Well, it's a linebacker that we know. It's an ex-player. It's a guy that's in our orbit. It's someone that we're familiar with. You know, you just had somebody in here. I know there was a big difference in experience. But Vrabel didn't exactly end on a high note out there in Tennessee. In fact, he had one season where they were 7-2 to start the year, and then they lost out. They lost the rest of the games that year. Finished 7-10. I guess they were 7-3. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's there's a history of that with him. There was a history of that with him in Tennessee. Things kind of broke down. He had big-time feuds with ownership and with management, and then he was out on his ass and didn't get hired right away. So, you know, like, that to me was a bit of a red flag. Now, I was certainly wrong about that. I was wrong about the idea, which I thought could be a real thing, of Josh McDaniels not having the same kind of success with a new quarterback and not being under the wing of Bill Belichick anymore. I'm an offensive coordinator again, but this guy Vrabel, I was a head coach. I coached against him. This is a contemporary of mine. And what, I got to take orders from him now? I got to listen to him? And that's worked out swimmingly. It seems like they get along fine. I know there was some question about, you know, Vrabel kind of changing the subject whenever anybody brought up McDaniels and his contributions, but I haven't heard much of that lately. Seems like everything's humming right along. And whatever you think about that, you know, if Vrabel wanted somebody else as an offensive coordinator or whatever, he can't be bothered by what the results have been here. The Drake May Josh McDaniel partnership has been fantastic so far. Fantastic. And the Mike Vrabel system, or, you know, if you want to call it that, Mike Vrabel, the hierarchy that he's sort of put in place here, has been performing admirably. I don't have any complaints. I mean, I don't know how you could. I don't know what aspect of that you don't think is running well. You want to say the trade deadline was a dud? It was. I agree. I think it absolutely was. And I still think there's a chance that their inactivity at the deadline comes back to bite them. I do think that that's possible. Not because they had to make a move just to satisfy narratives on the radio, Tommy Kern or whatever, you know, like I heard him today. But that was, you know, to me, I think that there's a lot of areas in which they could have maybe flipped a sixth round pick and brought in a little bit of depth. It didn't even have to be starters necessarily. Just something to shore up a little bit. Something to shore up that running back room, because now you got another guy down. And I'm not sure Travion Henderson's going to be busting out, you know, 50, 60-yard runs every week. It'd be nice if he did, but I'm not betting the farm on that. Edge rusher. Wide receiver room with Booty out. I mean, there's other places where I think that those kind of resources could have been reallocated, and I think that if they really wanted to get a deal done, they could have. Because other teams did. And the Patriots did. But all of their moves were subtracting. And that, to me, was not exactly what I was expecting when you have a team that's much, much better than people were planning on them being to start the year. And now they're here at the top with these other teams in the AFC. And not that every team in the AFC made moves at the deadline. A lot of them didn't. Sure, you're right about that. But I thought that the Patriots, with all their draft picks and with all their money, would be one that did. 617-779-7937. Richard is in Salisbury. Hey, Richard.
Christian, how we doing, buddy?
What's up, pal?
Hey, I just want to say, you know, we're kind of strolling along here, okay? And I think that if they knock off Buffalo at home and they take down the Ravens, how many people in this league are going to be believers as they're going to the Super Bowl or not, okay? But the biggest thing is, if they can clinch a spot and they can win this division, look what we got for the last two games. They got a lot of room there to give themselves some time to recover and recuperate and rest their players and go into the playoffs. That's a huge advantage.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely it is, Richard. No question about it. Thanks for the call. It's crazy to even be talking about this, isn't it? It's crazy. Like, it all does seem like a dream sometimes. Your 23-year-old quarterback is the odds-on MVP favorite through 10 games this season? Like, that's crazy. It's crazy. Your head coach is odds-on favorite for coach of the year right away, along with your MVP quarterback. You're 8-2 talking about a bye, talking about a home division playoff game. Like, it's just, it's very, very surreal. It's a very surreal time to be a Patriots fan. It is. Every week, you know, you just, and even this one coming up here, it's the Jets. The Jets suck. Oh, do they suck? They're not really a serious team at all. They have a quarterback who can't throw the ball. They have won two in a row, in fairness, with a bye in between. They did feast there on the dregs of the NFC South. Excuse me, the NFC North. Beating up on the Bengals and the Browns in consecutive weeks to earn their first two wins of the season. So, you know, hey, one of these win streaks, the unstoppable force, the immovable object, who's gonna come up from that? Garrett Wilson, by the way, out. That, I mean, that should be an absolute bloodbath.
Even the G-E-T-S suck, suck, suck.
The G-E-T-S? Close. Very close. Just one letter away from being what you meant to say there. 617-779-7937. We'll talk more about the Jets tomorrow night because I do have some thoughts on that team, that entire organization, what they're about, what they've been doing. We'll get into more of a preview for that. And, of course, Thursday night, we will be the unofficial, and I do mean unofficial, Patriots pregame show for you here on WEEI, the Christian Arcan show from 6 until 8 o'clock. We'll be going full bore, full Patriots, hoping to have some surprise guests as well. We'll be taking you right up until that. And then, of course, we're going to dink around and pretend like the game doesn't exist once it starts. That's the way we're going to be handling it on Thursday, which is, you know, the way you got to do these things. Anyways, we'll have more on the Jets and all of that tomorrow and, of course, on Thursday. In the meantime, 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Joe Braverman is back behind the glass. He's going to get you caught up on what's trending. And when we come back, we'll be joined by Doug Kye of the Boston Herald. That's coming up next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
You might tell me to pump the brakes, but does this team remind you at all of the 2001 team?
Yeah, like that poor guy that got into the accident. He needed to pump the brakes there a little bit this morning. But I mean, that team in 2001, it was 5-5, won 9 games after Thanksgiving. I do think that the season starts now, and we'll have to be playing our best each and every week to give ourselves a chance. The comparisons and things are kind of interesting, but we know that they're not that important.
It's Mike Vrabel this morning. Not this morning, yesterday morning on the Greg Hill Show. Ty Law was this morning, and he had some thoughts on that same comparison, which we'll get to here in just a moment. Doug Kye will join the show here in about 6 minutes. Looking forward to getting his take
on this team at the top of the AFC right now, this Patriots team that has muscled their way right into just about every conversation, every single Vegas odds except for Super Bowl. Other than that, they're right there on everything. They're right there for the AFC East. They're right there to make the playoffs. They're behind some teams in terms of representing the AFC in the Super Bowl, and they're way down when it comes to actually winning the thing. But they got MVP, they got Coach of the Year. Odds on favorites right now, which I'm still not, I still don't get. I don't get that. And when you it comes to the 2001 team, comparisons like that, the one thing I would say is probably the same is that the Patriots were buried when it came to Super Bowl odds. No one thought that team could win a Super Bowl. I think that more people believe that this Patriots team can win the Super Bowl this year than the 01 team could at any point in that season until maybe the playoffs started and they beat the Raiders on that snowball game and everyone thought, okay, maybe this team's, maybe there's something going on here. But that's what it took. I mean, it took for that to happen before anybody really honestly believed that those 01 Patriots were actually going to be something special or even, you know, make it past the wild card round. Yeah, that was a nice finish to the year. And yeah, this Tom Brady kid looks like he could be something. But no one was talking about them as legitimate Super Bowl contenders. And when they were in the Super Bowl, they were double-digit underdogs, you know? Like, if the Patriots make it to the Super Bowl in relative tact, right, with Drake May still, you know, playing and near 90 to 100% or however close you're going to get, and they got, you know, their running game and Henry's playing and Diggs and Booty are playing, all those guys are playing, they're not going to be double-digit underdogs to anybody. I don't think that that really applies here. I think this team right now, I don't want to say they're better than the 2001 team, but they're being perceived as better than that team was being perceived at the time, for sure. For sure they were. That was much more of a, well, okay, your guy got knocked out. Like, this would be more akin to, let's say, Drake May gets knocked out of a game and Josh Dobbs comes in and they win the next six. Like, then that would be more like 2001. That would be more like 2001. Because where did this guy come from, right? And even Dobbs has more of a resume than Brady did when he took over for Bledsoe. Here's what Ty Law had to say about that very thing this morning.
There are comparisons being made between this team and the 2001 team. Any similarities from your perspective?
I mean, it's a similarity to how they're playing, you know, team football. And I think that's a great reflection of Mike Vrabel and the culture that he's creating around there now. So, I mean, there's similarities, but I mean, we would whoop their ass right now at this point because we had more experience at the time.
I like how, number one, I like how he said there's similarities. And he said, but we'd whoop their ass. That was great. That was a great answer there from Ty. I love Ty. I love Ty Law Tuesdays. One of my favorite days of the week. And I like that Hill was persisting with that question. You know, he asked two guys from the team what they thought about it. I asked Ted Johnson on Sunday. I said, Ted, out of all the players on this team right now, on this 2025-26 Patriots team, who would have started for you in 01? Who could have started in those dynasty teams? And you know what he said? Hunter Henry. Could have started over Wiggy. And Rod Rutledge, I think, was the backup tight end back in 01. And then eventually it was Fourier and, you know, Watson after that. But, like, you know, early on in the dynasty, I asked him, I was like, so who on this team could start? Because if you think about it, Drake May is not starting over Tom Brady, obviously. Even Christian Gonzalez, he's not starting over Ty Law, not yet. As good as he is, I mean, he's good. Ty Law's a Hall of Famer. Milton Williams isn't starting over Richard Seymour, you know? Like, that's what I mean. So, like, I was proud of myself. I thought it was a pretty good question. And it was a great answer because he took a shot at Wiggy. I don't know if Wiggy addressed that this morning. Do we know if Wiggy had a response to that? Because I thought that was a pretty good take. And he's probably right. Not even as a diss to Wiggy, but like Hunter Henry is, you know, would he have started on those teams? Probably. Probably. Rod Rutledge wouldn't have. But yeah, it was just an interesting little tidbit I thought there when we're talking about the 2001 team. I think this team is maybe more like, I don't want to say they're more like 03 or 04, maybe 03. Because the 03 team came off of a 0-2 season where they missed the playoffs. That 0-2 season, no one ever talks about it. But that seemed like, okay, flash in the pan, the 0-1 Patriots with Tom Brady. That was a nice little thing. That was, you know, lightning in a bottle, and now it's over, and this team is not really that great. You know, Peyton Manning was on the rise, and it was sort of like, okay, that's it, it's over. And then 0-3 happened. And then 0-4 happened, and that 0-4 team was just, I mean, we know what that 0-4 team was. But I'd maybe say this team's more like 0-3 than 0-1, just my personal opinion. And I also thought it was funny how he said, well, yeah, they're playing the team football. The whole thing with 0-1 was about they're getting announced as a team. Now Vrabel says, no, you go out there, be announced individually. A lot more individuality on the team now, which I think is another huge difference between this regime early on in the early days of it and Bill Belichick. And for more on that, let's go to the phones right now and welcome in our guest from the Boston Herald, talking, of course, about the great Doug Kite, who joins us here on the Christian Arcan Show. Mr. Kite, how are we doing tonight?
Doing well. How are you doing, Christian?
I'm doing great. Great to have you on. Been a while since we talked with you, and the Patriots have not lost a game. So let's go ahead and start there with this win streak that we saw, and let's get your thoughts on that win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which I thought would be the type of win that would change a lot of people's mind, maybe change some of the Vegas odds. It seems like the market is kind of frozen when it comes to the Patriots. I thought that that game would turn more heads. Do you get that sense, or do you think maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree here?
No, I agree with you. I think it probably should have turned more heads, and I guess it didn't really. Maybe it's just the manner in which they won. Obviously, it wasn't Drake May's best performance out there. They relied on some big plays, and there were some guys out with injuries for the Bucs, but I thought it should have been a game to turn heads. I think that they showed that the expectations that we even had for them coming into that game should be higher. Like, they should be in a higher echelon of teams when you're talking about power rankings or Super Bowl odds or you know, playoff odds. But, yeah, it seems like it didn't fully do that. And I don't think any of these games coming up against the Jets or the Bengals or Giants will do that either. So maybe the next opportunity will be against the Bills. But, I mean, winning 7 straight is not easy in this league. Going 8-2 is not easy. Obviously, the Patriots are a good team.
Yeah, they certainly are. And as someone who's in that locker room a lot, I was just talking about sort of the differences between the way Belichick ran things with his system and players that fit into the system and how everybody was sort of just a cog as opposed to Vrabel, and the way that he really pumps up his players and lets them be individuals and sort of all of that. It's got to be like night and day when you walk into that place and just see the tone and tenor kind of everyone's attitudes, the way they answer questions, all of that. I mean, is it still like hard to recognize? Do you feel like you're even walking into the same locker room even?
Yeah, it is a lot different, and it's from players that you don't necessarily expect it to be coming from. Like, obviously no one knew what Stephon Diggs was going to be like when he came to this team or some of these veterans, and I really do credit Vrabel almost fully with the culture on this team and with the buy-in, because this wasn't a slow build to this team. Like, they had to build things back very quickly this offseason by bringing in a bunch of veteran free agents, relying on a lot of rookies. And usually that team chemistry comes over time when guys really get to know each other and care about each other. But it really feels like it happened almost immediately this year. So it's been very positive to see.
Yeah, it certainly has. On the subject of the rookies, Travion Henderson, a real coming out party for him, certainly against Tampa Bay. We've seen reports now that it looks like Henderson's going to get the lion's share of the carries here against the Jets on Thursday. Looking at the day that he had outside of those two big runs, the Bucs do have a strong run defense, but it's hard to deny just how explosive he can be. Do you think that this is sort of a harbinger of things to come here if they unlocked Henderson?
I mean, to some degree, yes. I think that we will start to see some more of the big plays. But I even got asked for a mailbag for tomorrow. Like, okay, should Travion Henderson continue to be the starter when Ramondre Stevenson comes back? Or should he go back into his kind of secondary role? And I actually do think that he should probably take a back seat a little bit to Stevenson. I know that's probably not going to be a popular answer. But, like, outside of the big plays, outside of the 69-yarder, the 55-yarder, and the 16-yarder, the Patriots were averaging less than a yard per carry in that game, and that was over 16, 17 carries. Vrabel's talked about it. It was tough sledding outside those big plays, and you can't really rely on those big plays, obviously. It's great to have, but I don't think that that's like something that builds up over time with Travion Henderson. I think that he's got that big play ability no matter how many times he's on the field, and you do need someone who can run the ball between the tackles a little bit better. So I think we'll see more of Henderson. than we did early in the season. But when Stevenson comes back, I still do think they need some help there between the tackles and then also just as a pass protector as well.
Speaking of pass protection there, you're right. I mean, that was certainly a big knock on Henderson early on here. And with Drake May getting sacked as often as he does, didn't get sacked much by Tampa, despite them blitzing a good amount. Atlanta got to him. Cleveland certainly got to him. As we go further down here, do you think that there's been a concerted effort from Josh McDaniels and the rest of the offensive staff there to try and protect him a little bit more maybe than they would have otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, I think also against the Bucs, they were probably anticipating a decent amount of blitzing, so I think they were trying to get the ball out a little bit earlier. But there was still a decent amount of pressure in this game. But the one sack was when Drake May did the thing where he's done it quite a few times already this season, where he tries to scramble up the middle and then winds up getting tackled for a one-yard loss. And, like, ultimately, it should probably be a one-yard loss on a carry for Drake May. It winds up being a sack. So I think they did do a better job of keeping him upright in this game. But he was facing a lot of pressure. He was pretty good under pressure, which is obviously a positive, but yeah, I mean, you need to protect him. You can't be getting sacked six times a game or whatever it is. But, I looked at all of his sacks last week and really, I think there was only about 11 of the 34 that he had coming into last week that were the offensive line's fault. Most of them are either Drake May running out of bounds for you know, a one-yard loss or running up the middle for a one-yard loss, holding him the ball for too long. It's not catastrophic sacks where he's getting sacked for a nine-yard loss most of the time.
We're talking with Doug Kide of the Boston Herald. As you mentioned, Doug, it wasn't Drake's best game. It was one of his worst games of the year, honestly, statistically anyway. And I say that just because it's the first time in like 2 months his passer rating wasn't over 100. But how would you rate, just, you know, observing him in the locker room and on the sidelines and so forth, how would you rate his development as a leader on this team as opposed to his play on the field? How's his leadership skills and abilities been evolving this year, do you think?
I think we're starting to see his personality and his leadership coming out more. I don't think that's an issue. And it's funny because that was a big conversation all throughout the summer of Vrabel saying that he was, you know, pushing Drake May to be a leader and pushing him to do the right things. I think we're seeing in the locker room, and like, it's sometimes it comes across as kind of like a, almost like a no nonsense type personality from Drake May, where he's kind of bringing guys along to get back onto the bus after games, or, you know, he's got, it feels like he's almost kind of like an old soul despite being a 23-year-old. He's not really like an aw shucks type of guy in the locker room. So I do see it coming along. I think it's coming along really well. I think the team really has rallied behind him, and obviously having the success that he's had certainly helps. But it feels like he's had this mentality and this leadership ability since the beginning of the season. And I don't think players necessarily see him as like, oh, that's that like 23-year-old kid at this point. I really do think they view him as being their leader starting quarterback.
With him is the odds-on favorite for MVP. Mike Vrabel is the odds-on favorite for Coach of the Year. And I know there's still 7-8 weeks to go here. Why do you suppose that there's still skepticism that this team is for real when they have the MVP and the Coach of the Year?
Yeah, I think it's probably just what the expectations were coming into the season, how bad they've been the last 2 years. I think some of it's the schedule, obviously, the fact that other than the Bills and Bucks, people just view them as being a team that's beating up on bad teams. But I think that it's just like everyone's priors, you know, everyone like what they were predicting for the Patriots before the season began is still what they're expecting at this point. And like, I don't know, maybe I'm a culprit of that just as much as everyone else, because like, I don't really want to talk about Super Bowl at this point for the Patriots. I don't know if we're at that point with them yet until they continue to prove it throughout the year. I think a lot of that is based on what the expectations for them were coming into the season. And they're probably not on paper as talented as some of the other teams out there.
What's one player on this team that you don't think is getting the credit they deserve for how good they are?
Ooh, that's a very good question. I think, I don't know. I mean, I guess Will Campbell to some degree. Mm-hmm. I think that he's been really solid as a rookie left tackle. Garrett Bradbury to some degree as well. He struggled a little bit against Vita Vea, but I mean, people are expecting him to be a disaster this season at center, and he's played pretty good football all season. He's been a great veteran leader. I think he's got good rapport with Drake May. it's funny that there's probably a lot of guys like Jalen Hawkins. I think he's having a really good season this year. Robert Spillane. No one really talks about Robert Spillane, but he's been really solid there in the middle. So I just give you like five different names. Like there's a lot of guys on this roster that are better than people give them credit for being.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think there's been a lot of contributions. And Mac Hollins is another guy. I mean, he's led the team in the receiving yards two of these games here in the street. Last question. Why is this team so good at stopping the run and so bad at rushing the quarterback? How's that possible?
I think they're actually more middle of the road, below average, somewhere around there at rushing the quarterback. But stopping the run, guys are just swarming to the ball. And that's something that Mike Vrabel has preached since the beginning, that we want everyone rushing the ball. We want to be helping out teammates. So if one guy doesn't bring someone down, then everyone else will. I think that Milton Williams and Christian Barmore can get upfield. They can disrupt things in the middle there. And they can get there quicker, I think, in run defense than they can as pass rushers. As far as the pass rush goes, a lot of it is kind of circumstantial. But I would certainly like to see them better in that degree. I think some of it also is just depth. The Patriots don't have a lot of depth behind Harold Landry and Caleb Von Chason. So I think those guys are probably getting used a little bit too much there on the edge, and that'll slow them down as games go along. So it's good to see Elijah Ponder get a sack against someone as good as Tristan Wirfs. Maybe he can emerge here over the back third of the season and help those guys out a little bit more. But it is interesting. They're very disruptive against the run and not quite as disruptive as pass rushers.
That is the voice of Doug Kite of the Boston Herald. You can read his stuff there in the Herald and on bostonherald.com just about every day. Doug Kite, thanks so much for the time tonight. Great to hear from you. We'll talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. Sounds good, Christian.
All right. Doug Kite there, Boston Herald, joining us here on the Christian Arcan Show. You can find him on Twitter at Doug Kite. All right. We're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to take a break from football. It's been all football for the entire show so far. We are going to take a quick break and talk a little bit about what Craig Breslow had to say. He had some things to say about this team in this offseason, some things that at first I was excited to hear, and then I remembered some things that he said not too long ago, and I became a little bit more skeptical, as I am wont to do. We'll get to that next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
I think someone that is a threat who can hit in the middle of the order and can lengthen our lineup is going to be something that we're going to pursue. That is absolutely a path to improving our team.
With the you said a priority is middle of the order, power bat. What is another priority, top of the list priority going into offseason for you?
Yeah, starting pitching. And particularly someone that we feel like can pitch alongside or slot in behind Garrett, and start a playoff game for us.
Craig Breslow, the owner's meeting, or the GM meetings, excuse me. He's talking about the Red Sox and their offseason priorities here. It's Christian Arcan Show. We're taking a Patriots break. We'll get to some other stuff at 8 o'clock with the headlines, and we will circle back to the Patriots later on in the show. But I wanted to just touch on this because I do think there is something to be said here. Number one, great to hear that he's at least saying that he's focused on the right things. Need some power in the middle of the order. Absolutely you do. That offense really went in the tank towards the end of September. You do need another front-end rotation starter. Absolutely you do. We'll see what happens with Giolito. Bayo's here to stay for a while. Crochet's here to stay. After that, it's very iffy. Tanner Houck, Cutter Crawford. Who knows? I mean, we'll see what these kids, Connelly Early, Peyton Tolley. We'll see who's part of that rotation, but those are all ifs. Those are all question marks. You want something solid. You want something that you know you can feel good about. And I'm happy to hear that. But I also was thinking about it on my way in and realized, you know, that's exactly almost what he said at the trade deadline. Almost verbatim. I remember Craig Breslow explicitly saying a couple of things. Number one, he wanted the team to get uncomfortably aggressive at the trade deadline. Uncomfortably aggressive. Whatever the hell that means. We never really did get what that meant. He said there were no untouchable players in the farm system, but did seem unwilling to want to trade anybody off the major league roster despite a massive logjam in the outfield. He said that they would be targeting right-handed power bat and front-end starting pitching. Those were the two main things, and he wanted a high-leverage reliever as well. But the big emphasis was on front-end starting pitching and a right-handed power bat, and that was what they were going to emphasize rather than just trying to patch various holes in the roster. No. We're going for specifically this and this. And then afterwards, well, they got to like our players. They pursued multiple guys, but we couldn't line up a deal. We just tried, but it didn't happen. It didn't work. They made two trades. They got Steven Matz. They got Dustin May. Neither one of those players is either a right-handed power bat nor a frontline starting pitcher.
Teams have to like our players.
And apparently they didn't. Apparently they just weren't all that impressed. And you couldn't get anything done or you didn't want to get anything done because you didn't want to give up prospects for rentals, which you ended up doing anyway. But you wouldn't go the extra mile and get one of those bats, get one of the, you know, Nailers or the Rosarios or one of these other guys that moved to the deadline. And I'm not even talking about Suarez or something like that. But plenty of bats moved to the deadline, and they moved to teams that you were competing with, including the team that beat you in the wild card round. You know, they made some moves. You did not. And I look at that, and I think about it, and I feel as though I like that Breslow's saying that, but I've also heard it before. On the other hand, we're not talking about the trade deadline. We're talking about the offseason. And Breslow, last year anyway, knocked it out of the park in the offseason. Literally. I mean, he was deft in that offseason, and every move he made ended up being a good one, except for Walker Buehler. Other than that, they were all just massive, massive hits. Crochet, massive hit. Chapman, massive hit. Which I didn't think it would be, but it was. Alex Bregman, massive hit. Even though he fell off hard at the end of the season, that was still a very, very good signing. And I do hope that they bring him back. And they spent. They spent to get Bregman. They spent to keep Crochet. And they spent to bring in Chapman. And then they extended Chapman, too. So money was flying around. Money was going to these various places. Craig Breslow, you can't say, was sitting on his thumbs in the offseason. You can say he was at the deadline. You can say it was an underwhelming deadline. It was the type of deadline that you look at and you go, eh, okay, same old Red Sox, I guess. But with that offseason, that gave me hope for what this offseason can bring. Garrett Crochet, they tried to trade for him last trade deadline, last year. And the asking price was astronomical. They wanted Roman Anthony. They wanted Marcelo Meyer. They wanted everyone. They wanted the whole farm system. And the Red Sox said no, and they waited till the offseason, and they got him for Kyle Teal instead. Maybe that's how you get Joe Ryan. Maybe it's that same sort of thing. You know, we'll see what we can do this year. We're not going to mortgage the future or mortgage the present, I guess, or whatever it was that they were asking for Joe Ryan, which I can't even imagine at this point what the Twins would have wanted. Or maybe they just said, you know what, your farm system's not what we're looking for. We're going to trade Joe Ryan, but we want better prospects than what you can offer us. And then maybe they ended up kicking themselves after they saw Connelly early. I don't know. We'll see. But things change. Things change quickly. Teams that are holding out for the biggest possible godfather offer at the trade deadline end up softening their defenses a little bit once you get to the offseason. We've seen that happen time and time again. The question is Breslow going to be allowed off the leash again? Is he going to be allowed to go out there and make those kind of moves for two straight off seasons? Will John Henry allow that? Yes, Joe.
Can I just share, because apparently Craig Breslow spoke again today.
Oh.
And our pal Gordo aggregated some things that Pete Abraham just shared. One of the things he aggregated was Craig Breslow told the media he wouldn't be surprised if one of the Red Sox's two big needs, being a power bat and a second starting pitcher, was filled with a trade and the other via free agency.
Okay. Okay. Great. I mean, that's what they did last year. Same kind of thing. So, you know, that's what they're looking to do. Then I say go for it. I'm all for them doing both of those things. I was all for them doing either one of those things at the trade deadline, and they did neither one of those things at the trade deadline. So I am still just a little bit. I'm not all in yet. I'm not all in with Breslow. I'm not all in on the idea that this is going to be a realistic thing. A trade should be able to get made. They should be able to make a trade for a power bat. They should be able to make a trade for a frontline starter. They have the pieces to move, and it seems like Jaron Duran is basically signed, sealed, delivered out of town at this point, which I'm not sure I like either, by the way. I'm not sure I love the idea of just giving up on him after one mediocre season and giving the keys to the castle right to Sadon Rafaela. You know what I mean? Like, I have a bit of an issue with that. And that's not even to say that, you know, I don't like Willie Abreu or that I have a problem with Roman Anthony. Obviously, you don't like Roman Anthony. He's the face of the franchise. But Jaron Duran was your best player not too long ago. I mean, 2 years ago. MVP candidate. Playing at a level that Sadon Rafaela offensively couldn't even dream of in the time that he's been in the majors. And even someone like Willie Abreu, who is turning into a pretty, if he didn't get hurt, he would have been your, you know, main power hitter this year. But he did get hurt, and, you know, between him and Duran, the power numbers were there for Abreu, but Duran still gave you a decent season. It's not like he was an absolute zero in the lineup or anything like that. And I'm just surprised that they're willing to kind of give up on that experiment. And just say, nope, we're good here. We'll trade him away as opposed to one of those other guys. I'm a little surprised. I think that's a risky gambit. One way or another, it does seem like they are ready to make some moves. They are ready to wheel and deal. And hopefully they're ready to throw some real money around, because it's going to take real money to get a power bat. It's going to take real money to get a starting pitcher. If they're doing one way and the other way, either way they do it, they're going to have to spend some money. And not for nothing either, but if they trade for a guy that wants an extension, they should give that guy that extension. Like, they should do it. If it's someone that they really want to pick up in this offseason and want to keep in the lineup for a while, like a right-handed power bat, instead of just mixing and matching every single year, it's a new guy. It's Bregman, it's Duvall, it's Justin Turner, it's whoever. I mean, it's, you know, it's a new player every single year that becomes their right-handed power. Tyler O'Neill, and they move on to the next one. I've ranted and raved about this ad nauseum. I'm sure you're all probably sick of hearing it. But you know what I mean? That's sort of where I'm at. Let's get some stability. Let's get some continuity here. And you can do it because you can afford it. You got the resources. You got the money. You can go out there and make that happen if that's what you really want to do. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Quick break. When we come back, we got your 8 o'clock headlines.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.